Hello and welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, co-host of the Trauma Super Conference. Today, I'm speaking with Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach, somatic experiencing practitioner in training, and the host of the Healing Trauma Podcast. She's worked for over 25 years as a social worker with vulnerable populations. She's also a survivor of childhood trauma. Her passion today is educating and supporting survivors by helping them understand how trauma can impact their bodies, minds, and soul, and how to find safety and healing on their journey. Monique Coven, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me back.
So I'd love if we could start by you going into kind of what are some of the misconceptions that people have about trauma healing?
That's a great question. I think that people often think that one, especially once they discover that they have trauma, that okay, now I know, okay, this is complex trauma. It makes sense. What do I do about it? And the mentality is often like we approach a problem. This is the problem. Do this, and then it's going to be finished, or you're going to deal with it, and it'll be over. The solution will be found. And I think that that makes sense because, especially for those of us who have had childhood trauma and experienced a lot of suffering, ongoing repeated trauma, and then we grow up, we realize, oh, okay, this is what it is, it has a name. And now my suffering will come to an end because I'm going to get the problem fixed. And so I think we have misconceptions that if we do this one thing or if we do this, that we're not going to feel our symptoms anymore. And that, I had one person recently say to me, "So what do I need to do to not feel anxious anymore?" Like, so I think that we have to understand that it's called complex trauma for a reason because it's complex. It's not, I'm referring specifically to like repeated childhood trauma or developmental trauma. And I think we need to have some understanding that healing takes time and that change can happen, but it may not look the way you may think it should look, or even the way it might be presented sometimes.
And I even want to back up just a little bit also, because I realize that we may be doing just a disservice not by kind of outlining the different types of trauma, because I think a lot of people don't realize the differences in different types of trauma and different levels of trauma, and discount their own experiences because they're not aware of things like complex trauma. So if you could kind of just do a little brief description of how those differ.
I'm going to say that, I mean, trauma is a personal experience. Something can be traumatic for one person and not for another. And if something that you experience is overwhelming to your system and impacts you, and you don't really feel like you have any agency or there's really no way to deal with it, that energy sort of gets stuck in the body. And you have this experience of really being stuck. And that can happen in a one-time event, for example, like bullying. Well, bullying is often repetitive, so I shouldn't say one time, but a one-time event, let's say a rape or a one-time event that was extremely overwhelming and traumatic, a car accident where you felt like, and you couldn't escape, or repetitive where it happened on an ongoing, it was regular, it was repetitive, it was expected. And then you get into all the with complex trauma, all developmental trauma and attachment stuff. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. But really, that's sort of what we see. In the past, it was more recognized that trauma was a one time, or not necessarily one time, but a trauma was more like a veteran or an accident or, a rape, a one time thing. What we know now is children that have had experiences like bullying, or like repetitive childhood trauma, chaos experiences like that, where they were immobilized, couldn't get away, and so on, is trauma as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And all of those, yeah, we're not discounting one for the other. And also things like, and when we talk about childhood traumas, I always like to contextualize for people too, that it doesn't mean that there was any ill will intended by the parent necessarily, right? Like neglect can come from, medical needs and illness, things like that. Death in the family, where the parents don't have the capacity to support both themselves and their children, right? Like, these are not necessarily maliciously intended actions or neglectful actions. These are just the nature of human beings living tough lives sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking about how, thinking of this earlier, I think it was Peter Levine who said, like trauma is, I shouldn't quote him because maybe he didn't say it exactly like that, but it's something like it is part of life. And so even as you were discussing parents who, were not like intentional, often, you know, that just could be it. It could be from their generation where they didn't receive attunement and love, and then they don't know how to actually show it and give that attunement. And it's not necessarily maliciousness. It's just that they don't have that capacity because it was never shown to them.
Exactly. Okay, great. So now that we've kind of laid out that context just a little bit better for people that might be joining us for the first time, as a trauma recovery coach, I imagine that you see a lot of people who have been in pain for a long time. They want this quick fix. And as we discussed earlier, it's like, because we're used to that in like the medical and diagnosis community, we're used to, okay, I have this thing, I take a pill or I go to physical therapy to fix, you know, I've got a creaky knee, I'm going to go do like 6 weeks of PT and my knee's going to be stronger and I'm going to move on from this injury. And so many traumas feel like an injury and a dysfunction of pattern. So why wouldn't I apply the same lens? And so why is developmental trauma so complex, and how do you kind of piece it apart on the journey toward healing?
It's like such a great, great question. And I'm so glad, because I think that in the past, we would often see trauma from a cognitive perspective. So you think about it differently. You understand why things happened. You respond, you change your thoughts and you'll think differently about it. And then you should be better. And if you're not, well, try harder and think differently. And we just realized that that just does not work. Why? Because we now understand, thank you, polyvagal theory and more, that trauma is really living in the body. And so one of the things we know is that very early, certain patterns in our bodies, they become patterned. So if we've had trauma and we have learned that not to expect, for example, let's say we didn't have safety with caregivers, we were sort of left on our own and we developed sort of a hypervigilance towards the environment, towards the world, because we didn't learn to expect predictable soothing, that everything was going to be okay. And so we become hypervigilant. And what happens is that this gets patterned, especially if we haven't had safety in our closest relationships. We go into the world and in our mind, we know, oh, people are safe. I know what to do. And yet we can feel our body constrict when someone tries to come closer. I'm like, what's happening? I don't get it. I would like to be friends with this person. I want to speak. Like, all these things are happening. Our mind is saying no, but our body is responding. So to answer your question, I think it's really important at the beginning to kind of understand that, it's really, really important, because it will empower the survivor when they understand what's going on. Because the biggest thing is, why is this happening? And we get so afraid, like, why am I responding when everything is safe now? What's wrong with me? And to know that there's nothing wrong with you. This makes perfect sense in the context of what you were raised in, and your body is doing exactly what it learned to do to protect you. And just sort of giving them that education, the trauma-informed education, is super helpful. So really, we start there. And then we move into, okay, so if I have a body that's hypervigilant and anxious and ready for the next threat, how can I show my body that it's actually safe today? That's a hard one for many survivors, because being in the present moment is extremely difficult, and it can feel to the body like a threat because it learned that being in the present isn't safe, because the shoe can drop any moment. So you have a lot of people who are who dissociate, or they find themselves doing numbing behaviors or avoidance behaviors so they don't have to feel present. So the beginning is really helping people. What are ways that you can just touch into a moment of safety in the present? So we really work at that. Because had you asked me years ago, what does it feel like to be safe? I would really say, I don't know. I have a joke, eating ice cream or sleeping. That's basically it. So we want to help people to feel safe, because when you start to feel safe, you can be present. You can connect to people. You can feel like alive and present and in the now. So that's another thing that we do is that. And then, I mean, there's so many other things. If you've never used your voice because you learned that it's not safe to say what you really feel, speaking up in the present is going to be a real challenge for you and will feel really threatening. Another area is getting in touch with your needs. What needs? We've been so cut off from what our body is feeling and what we need, that getting in touch with it. Often what happens is you may find yourself being a people pleaser, being directed towards other people's needs, because that's what you learned as a trauma response. And you may find yourself being that way and saying, ignoring that you have any needs or really figuring out what they are. So that boundaries, learning what a safe relationship is. Many of us have grown up in homes we had emotionally immature parents or self-absorbed parents, narcissistic-like. And so there was no reciprocity. So if you haven't learned reciprocity, you may be going into your adulthood and not having or receiving or thinking that's kind of normal. That's how relationships are. So learning what a safe relationship is, that it's reciprocal, and beginning to be in those and find those. So those are just some of the little things. But as you can see, it's complex. There's many areas. So you may start to work on one. Okay, how can I start to feel safe in my body? And then you might look at, how can I use my voice? How can I feel safe in relationships? I mean, there's many, and it takes time.
Absolutely. I'm glad all of the things that you just outlined are so fantastic and reminds me that everybody comes to their trauma healing journey via a different inspiring incident, if you will, or inspiring desire to remedy something. I am one of the people that came to my drama healing journey because I couldn't use my voice. People might find that hard to believe considering how much I talk for a living now. But I knew that I had a story to tell that was mine, that was personally, and I knew it was, I felt it, I could actually feel physically, it's the stuckness in my body. But I also related to a lot of what you said around like food and how people find food so comforting. And so, but you can develop dissociations around food and use it as a numbing technique. And so things like mindful eating. So you might come to trauma work with a, you know, a trained trauma professional and say like, I just don't understand my relationship with food and eating. And I know what's the right thing to nourish my body. And I don't feel my cues because I'm not in touch with my physical sensations and things like that, right? Is that kind of along the lines of what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. And all of these behaviors that, you know, in the past we would say, you know, he's a drug addict, we need to stop the drugs, or a food addict, gotta stop the food. We never really looked at the root cause. And really these behaviors are, we're trying to just regulate ourselves. You know, I sucked my thumb until they put braces in my mouth. And good for me, because I didn't have anything, but I found my thumb. So good for me.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so validating too, because I mean, when you think about how sophisticated our bodies are, and Dr. Ron Siegel, who I interviewed this year, always reminds me that we were not developed as human beings to be happy. We developed over millions and millions of years to stay alive. And, you know, all of these coping mechanisms that we use and develop to get through hard things and survive, they're literally meant for our survival. So we can forgive ourselves for thumb sucking until we got braces, or for, you know, developing over a long period of time an unhealthy relationship with food, or those kinds of things. Like, it makes sense, is what I'm saying.
And what I see is that as soon as they understand, people start to understand that, the shame just starts to, because it's no longer you. It's my body responds to. It's not personalized, which is really great. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's taken me a long, long time to get here. But I've noticed now, because there's nothing more humbling than when you've been on a trauma healing journey for a while, and then you are put into a situation where you just emotionally regress very quickly. I'm laughing as I say it, but it's because it's been about a year since that happened. But you're like, wow, huh? You know, and then there's a grace that comes after that of like, okay, wow, I'm going to just like allow my body and my brain to have an experience. And it doesn't mean that I'm done. And also just in less threatening situations than that. Oh, though, even, you know, just socially, if you come upon an intense situation that doesn't even involve you, I had this situation in the last 3 months where there was an intense situation publicly out in the world that I just happened to be near and kind of a bystander of, and got completely flooded with dysregulation, right? Which is an uncomfortable feeling, even if it's not about you. But it was able to, in that moment, just say thank you to my body. I was like, wow, thank you for raising my heart rate in case I needed to take action. And thank you for, you know, making my brain and my actual vision very focused. Like I could feel all of these things happening out of my control in my body, and understood like, this is to protect me. I feel like I'm in danger or adjacent to danger, as it was. And my body is designed to do this and to keep me alive.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I wish someone would have just said that to me, you know, when I was going through my healing and trauma wasn't even recognized at the time. And just to say that would have been like, okay, yeah, our bodies are there for us. Because often we think our bodies have maliciousness against us because they're making us anxious, you know, but they're really there designed to protect us and help us. So
begging for our attention, right? Yeah.
Yes, yes. Love it.
So what are some of the options for support on a trauma healing path? I know you're a coach, so that's obviously one methodology. So please tell us about that. And then some of the other paths.
I love that because I think what's so important for trauma survivors is choice. And now that we understand, for the most part, we're beginning to understand, it's really important that if you do work with someone, you work with someone who is trauma informed and that is trauma trained, because maybe they might use that lingo, yes, trauma informed, but you can ask, you know, are you trained and in what? Because often if you go for help for trauma and they are not trauma trained, then they might start to work with things in the mind back to your thoughts. And then you can start to think that this is your fault, that you're not, you know, trying hard enough and all that. So today there's lots of choice for trauma-informed support and work. So there is coachings, different kinds of coaching out there. On my podcast, I really do try to invite different modalities so people can get a taste of what's this, what's that. I can talk about, you know, what I do and what I love and support that is out there as well. So for me, a lot of the work that I do is just helping people understand what's happening and help them to begin to find ways to feel safe in their bodies and how to do that and how to start to feel some self-compassion for yourself and your responses, which is so important, being a compassionate witness and so on. The other stuff is there's options like different modalities like IFS, which is internal family systems, which is kind of parts work. I am a big fan of interrelational focusing. I'm training in that right now. I love that because that is one where we really, it's a felt sense. It's a somatic work where we really develop a compassion towards our responses and a relationship with them. So that's one I love. I said somatic, maybe I didn't. Somatic experiencing is one I love. Sensory motor psychotherapy. A lot of this, a lot of the bottom up approaches are extremely helpful for trauma. EMDR, all of those are really, really helpful. And trauma healing is cumulative. So that means that you can do something for a while and you might feel like, okay, maybe I'll do something else. And then you might do something else. It's cumulative. It'll all be helpful. And just be patient with yourself. Take your time. Every bit helps. My own healing journey was a journey of just growing the capacity, and it was slow and steady, and I'm very different from what I once was.
I love that you named that. I mean, it is, a lot slower than most people would like. And it, yeah, and it is something that grows over time. And I know from my experience, and maybe you've had the same, please tell me, but there are times when I don't want the somatic part, right? Where I'm like, we're going to spend a little time working through my trauma in the thinking part. We're going to go top down for a while, right? And it's intentional. I'm like, you know what I need right now? I need a top down approach. We're just going to talk. And then like you reach a period where like, okay, great. I've said all the words about that particular piece. Now I've got to integrate it. We're going to go some bottom up, right? And we're literally speaking like in terms of, for people who haven't heard that kind of terminology before, we're talking like in your head, your thoughts about things, your memories, your things like that. And then bottom up meaning, how does that feel in your body? Where does it feel in your body? What is the sensation in your body? So I'd love if you could describe that bottom up approach a little bit more for people, and what somatic experience kind of entails and the investigation or the unfolding that is kind of involved in that.
Yeah, I won't be able to give you a big definition of somatic experiencing. I'm training in that right now, but I don't think I'm far enough to be able to, I don't think I would do it justice, but I do have a really great episode on there from somatic experiencing on the podcast. But in general, what bottom-up approach is versus top-down is really getting a sense of what is happening in our bodies. Because trauma lives in our bodies, if we're triggered, it's not something we can sort of think it through. So an example would be like, if I was walking through the forest and a tree fell on me, I would remember that because that was traumatic. And so the next time I would walk in the forest, I would probably, you could see my shoulders up, my arms, my body remembers that. So somatic work would be looking at ways that we can help our felt sense to feel a little bit safer, to help our bodies know that even though we may feel some anxiety in the moment, there are other places in our body that feel safe, and to feel into that so that we see that it's not all consuming. There's parts of us that are also grounded and, sitting still, and our feet are on the floor, and sort of getting a feel for that. But for the most part, I think it's reattaching ourselves back into our body so we can feel what we were designed to feel, and to let it move through instead of, oh no, it's too much, and kind of like bypassing it or just staying upstairs. When we start to allow ourselves to feel it, what we discover is that it does move through, it does dissipate. But we're often too afraid because we remember how horrible we felt in the past. So we don't want to go there. So it's slowly allowing ourselves to feel it in small bits at first, and then just allowing it to move through and seeing that it does move through, and that we build the capacity to be with certain sensations and feelings. And yeah, in a relationship focusing, which is what I was telling you about earlier, you actually develop a relationship with some of those sensations and feelings, and you get to know it and you relate to it. And it's really a lovely way to show compassion to parts of you that you just like didn't want anything to do with. So it's really lovely.
That sounds lovely. And also brings me back to a point you made earlier about just the kind of support that you have as well, right? Because part of the reason that it may feel unsafe to investigate or listen to those parts and those sensations is because we were never allowed to have them in an environment that was safe before. We were never supported in a way that was emotionally mature or with someone that had the capacity to hold whatever big emotions or big feelings or big sensations we were having. And so we got the messages that it wasn't okay to have those. And so getting the right support, people trauma-informed and trauma-trained, as you said before, really integral kind of in that journey as somebody that can hold space for all that stuff.
Absolutely.
So on that note, are there any types of support you think people should avoid when they're seeking support for their trauma?
I have a thought in my head, but I'm not going to say it because I don't want to say. Yeah, I don't want to say it. But I would just say that it's important that you meet with someone who really does understand the body and the mind, because it is both, but one that doesn't just focus on the thoughts and upstairs and just thinking about things. So I would, you can ask a lot of questions to the person that you seek out, find out the kind of training they did and look that up. What is that? And also you want to listen to your body when you're with someone. So I remember myself in the past when I saw someone, because I was so disconnected from what I felt, didn't matter if I didn't connect with her or because I didn't listen to that anyway. But you do want to listen, because if you feel safe with that person, then you'll really be able to get some nice work done. If you don't, you might find yourself holding back. And so pay attention to how you feel with the person as well.
That's a great reminder. I think that's great. And it can be overwhelming, I'm sure, at the beginning of your trauma journey and you're trying to get healing and there's so many things to navigate, especially if you're here in the States with insurance and providers and who takes it and who doesn't and who's trained in the right modality. So it's very overwhelming. So I encourage people to definitely also check out your podcast, because I think that you do a great job when you interview people of they're bringing people with different areas of expertise that can talk about how their expertise relates to trauma healing and recovery. So that's a great thing to check out. Monique Coven, how can people find out more about you and your podcast?
Well, the podcast is called The Healing Trauma Podcast, and it's the same name for my website, thehealingtraumapodcast.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.